man.
Fire.
Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am the son. My name is Eric Payne, and I'm one of the co-hosts of the K Thompson Live Show. And this is one and only
K Thompson, and I am the mother of the son. And we have quite an exciting show again today for your celebrating the life of Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen, as many of people know in our community. He danced away a couple of weeks ago, I think it was now. We're going to be finding out if they'll be brought up to date on the particulars about the ceremony.
Right, and we just wanted to say that this was a part two in a two-part series show. We're talking about the life and works of Dr. Ben. Go ahead, Ma.
Yeah, Dr. Yosef Ben Yekinen, as we were saying. He is now, he was and is, because his presence is still very much alive, an Egyptologist, an African scholar. He came here from, where was he born? I'll have to ask Dr. Jeffries, who is going to be on the air with us, and Wayne Gilman, and we'll find out exactly where he was born. I don't remember that. But anyway, we have a lot of information to go over about, the ceremony and about what's going to be going on and is going away. We do know that the ceremony is going to be held at Abyssinian Baptist Church, and that is in Harlem. And we're going to be brought up today, so as soon as Dr. Jeffries calls in, we will be talking to him. We are also going to be talking to Wayne Gilman, former news director at WLIB, BLS. And he's going to be joining us very shortly also and participating in the conversation. And also later on during the show, we're going to be talking to Eric Malwolfo. We all know Mal, and he was, a key person over at WIBBOS in those days when, it was really flourishing and, really coming into being as one of the main, black radio stations, in the entire country, as a matter of fact. So, and Mal is going to be talking about a really important topic and subject that we're really very concerned about, and that is the historical black colleges. It seems that a number of them are really in trouble financially. We are going to be talking about why they're not getting the monies from the government that is going to other colleges. We're going to be finding out about that, and Mal has that information up to date. Mal is the son of Dr. Caccioni, who was one of the oldest medical doctors, in Harlem, and she was quite an historian also, and she was very concerned with her community and very concerned with the historical aspect of the community, so that's what we're going to be talking about today. But one thing also, while we're waiting for them to call in, Wayne is calling in, he should be calling in about now, and so should Dr. Len Jeffries, while we're waiting for them to call in, I was looking at this book, as a matter of fact, that I found it some time ago, and the name of the book, as you can see, it's very old, okay? The name of it is The Black Book. There are not many copies. I don't even know if this one is the only copy. However, it is a very precious book. What it does and what it shows. I was talking about it several years ago about this Black Book. And the introduction is have an introduction that goes such like this. It says, suppose a 300-year-old black man had signed an oath, say he was about 10, keep his draft book, a record of what it was like for himself and his people in the United States. He would keep newspaper articles that interested him, old family photos, trading cards, advertisements, letters, handbills, ring books and posters and all sorts of stuff. He would remember things, too, and put those in stories he'd heard, rumors, dates. He'd remember the first March on Washington, House. John Quincy Adams defended Joseph Pinkett, of the Black Slave Ship Rebel, and one of the Jewish hospital that opened its doors to the wounded during the Civil War draft riots. He would know about black gold miners and pirates and factory owners and inventors, and he would keep records of black owned slaves, lyrics of songs he'd sung, voodoo recipes he tried, all of that he would put in his book. And he would end up with a folk journey of black America, a book just like this one, beautiful, haunting, curious, informative, and human. No such man kept the book, but it's okay, because it's here anyway. Sure wish I'd had it when I was in school, then I'd know what to say when Mrs. Broadbird said my speech was slang. I sure wish I'd had it in my house back in Philadelphia, then whenever I played the devil, I'd know where they came from. More important, I wish I had it when I went to the barber shop. Then it wouldn't have been necessary for that dude to leave his chair with half a haircut to run home and get his birth certificate to prove he was around when Josh Gibson was playing baseball. But here it is, at last, the black book. Everyone has one, you know. The difference in this one is that here, nobody changed the names to protect the guilty. Browse in it. The pickings ain't always easy, but they're always good. And actually, this is September 1973, and the name here is Bill Cosby.
So the black book is what? It is a book
on history, the history of black people in this country and before, before slavery, about Africa, and about some of the things that came out of the community. When you go into the book, it says he was there when the angel drove out the ancestor. He was there when the waters consumed the mountain. Okay? And
this was published around
1973. Okay. So, but the information apparently was, you know, it took a long time to research to get this information and put it into this book. It has all kinds of pictures and the maps and everything, and it talks about pre-days. And it talks about about Columbus. It says here, and he, Columbus, wanted to find out what the Indians of Hispaniola had told him, that they had come to it from the south. And southeast Negro people who brought these spear points made of a metal, which they called guanin, of which he had sent to the king and queen for a saying, meaning the, you know, for preparation for sale, and which was found to have in 32 parts, 18 gold, 6 of silver, and 8 of copper. So this is all very, very old. The information was apparently, you know, gotten or, you know, collected by, you know, people from hearsay, from people talking to people who were, you know, around a long time ago, and then it was put into this very, very precious book. And it has your pictures of it, and it also has maps in it. And as you go on, it has pictures of Africans and where Africans were purported to come from, and it talks about guanin. This was the native African name of the time for pebbles and or slabs of gold. This is the form in which it was imparted to Europe from the Guinea Coast. And it says quite naturally Columbus was being handed these things in America, and this pricked up his ears, for be it remembered that Columbus, like all the rovers before him, had as his primary object not the discovery of land merely, but the discovery of gold, ivory, spices, and any article saleable at a profit at home. So, you know, that has all of this information, you know, and I had looked through it.
And once again, that's a passage from the Black Book.
That's right.
Which is a black history collection of historical articles and things, I would suppose.
That's right. All kinds of information.
And we are joined by, I believe we're joined by our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. And Wayne, is that you?
That's me. Good evening, everyone. A little tardy tonight, but I'm here. Rushed to get here, and I gather that everything's under full swing at the moment with you all.
Yeah. We're waiting to hear from Dr. Jeffries, and he might be late in calling in. However, we're still going on with the show. I'm talking about a book, Wayne, that I meant to show you years ago. The name of it is, the Black Book, and it shows information about pre-slavery, about Africa, how they were sold. It's an amazing book. And when you see the cover of it, it has all kinds of pictures of early Africa, early people, things that they've done, so many different, right up to, I don't even know what year. It even shows pictures of the early performers okay?
Oh.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
And it has in here, too. And it says, and they sold us like beasts, and they counted our teeth, and they felt our testicles, and they tested the luster or the dullness of our skin.
And that's another passage.
Wow. It also, there is a page here that talks about the public sale of Negroes. And it says on Tuesday, March 5th, I'll just give
right, it's a re- it's a reprint of a bill.
Right.
Let's talk about what it is. It's a reprint of what apparently is a posting of, for people to come and
public sale of Negroes.
Participate in the sale of Negroes.
Right. And it says on Tuesday, March 5th, 1833, at 1 p.m., the following slaves will be sold at Potter's Mart in Charleston, South Carolina. Miscellaneous lots of Negroes. Lots of, meaning L-O-T-S, not lots, but, you know, I think they count.
Lot as in a lot of land.
Yeah. Mostly house servants. Some help for field work. And it has conditions. Cash, balanced by bond, bearing interest, some date of sale, payable in 1 or 2 years to be scarred or secured by a mortgage of the Negroes and appraised personal security. Auctioneer will pay for the paper. Okay? And then it has actually a description of a sale of a person, of a woman. It says a valuable Negro woman accustomed to all kinds of housework, is a good plain cook, an excellent dairy maid, washes and irons. She has 4 children, one girl about 13 years old of age, another 7, a boy about 5, and an infant 11 months old. 2 of the children will be sold with mother and others separately. Is it best to purchase it? And then it also says a very valuable blacksmith, wife and daughter.
Right. So it's basically a bill of a sale of slaves.
That's right.
And Dwayne, just to shift gears a little bit, wondering if you heard about any of the arrangements for Dr. Ben and in honoring his memory and his funeral arrangements.
Well, the only thing I heard, Eric, was basically what was disclosed last week by Dr. Jeffries, that there's going to be a wake, I believe, on the 8th, and the 9th will actually be the funeral itself, and it's going to be at Abyssinian Baptist Church. And the interment will be up at Ferncliff Cemetery up in White Plains, Greenburg, where Betty Shabazz and Malcolm X and a number of black luminaries have been laid to rest over the years. And which is fitting as I think of it, because at one point I had asked Dr. Jeffries why wasn't an arrangement made for him to be at the Schomburg, which is literally down the street from where he lived in Harlem for many years, but because of the political ramifications with the Blasio administration, you know, I guess that just couldn't happen. But this is just as well, and I can imagine it's going to be like a reunion when people attend, you know?
You have any comments about that, who you might think might attend, a lot of the people that you know that?
Oh, yeah, I'm quite sure. I mean, you know, because everybody, you know, who was interested, everyone who's been involved with Black Radio knew of Dr. Ben. Okay, they knew of Dr. Clark, they knew of Dr. Ivan Van Sturmer, and so many other of our historians. And Dr. Ben was also an Egyptologist. He was a scholar. He wrote several books. He was one of the most intelligent people I have ever met. He belonged to the United Nations. He was a lawyer also. And he had so much information about where man came from, the beginnings of man, that he actually sort of upset, you know, radio at that time when I first heard of him. He was on Gil Noble's show, as I was talking about, you know, talking about him last week. And I don't know where Gil had met him, but that was the first time that I saw him on Gil Noble's show. And I was so impressed with him as a young man. And I had called him at that time. I called Gil to find out if I could get in touch with this wonderful man, which I did. And he came on my cable television show in East Orange, New Jersey at that time. And I also had on a Jewish scholar, rabbi, on at the same time. And he sort of amazed everyone with the information that he had. And because of all his scholarly knowledge that he had, I mean, he was a doctor, he was a lawyer, he, you know, he's just, he's brilliant.
And quite a linguist at that too, Kay.
Yeah,
he spoke several languages, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And from that, we became good friends. And when when I had him on another show that I was doing on Channel 47, a television show, and got to talk to him on One to One, that was when he first introduced me to the story of the Black Madonna. And, of course, you know, I was really amazed at hearing this because I hadn't heard that before. And,
right.
You know, so, and I said, Black Madonna? He said, yes, as a matter of fact. If you, the New York Times does an article on it every year. It's around Christmas. So if you read the New York Times, they will talk about the Black Madonna, the statue of the Black Madonna, which is in Portugal. In Portugal. And lo and behold, I got the New York Times, and it did. And then I was saying last week, a friend of mine who, a white woman I was talking to, and I was, you know, explaining to her some of the history, repeating some of the history. This was, I guess, about maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And explaining to her about some of the information that I had on our history. And I said, have you heard of the Black Madonna? And I expected a no. She said, oh, sure. I said, you haven't, believe me. I was in shock. And she said, as a matter of fact, I have a picture of it. I said, will you please let me see it? And so she sent me the picture. She emailed me the picture, and it's got in my, in the computer here. And lo and behold, there's a picture of the baby. Let's see, the Black Madonna Isis and the baby Horus. So, and it's in this, I don't even know if it's in a museum or someplace, but it is in Portugal. So he was the first person to introduce me to that story.
And I try not to interrupt you, Kay. I mean, I think as a practicing Catholic, not to say that I'm extremely active, but it really, I find it almost borderline appalling that the church is not really set enough because, you know, this painting, this picture is something that is part of the Catholic Church's history. And as Dr. Jeffries pointed out last week, you know, he acknowledged that the Pope, the previous Pope, not the current, I could see his face, I can't think of his name right now, but I believe it was Pope John, Paul, that died a couple of years ago, went to Poland, where there is a statue and a painting of the Black Madonna there, you know? So this is something that has been is deep in Catholicism history, and yet, you know, you really have to do some digging to get information on it, and that's it. I just think it's amazing that Dr. Ben had all this information, and I'm a little latecomer to the to my association with him because I met him actually during an interview with Gary Bird once on the air, and I was just astounded, as you were astounded when you watched him on Gil or had a chance to meet him in person. He was just a force of energy and knowledge, a walking anthology, you know. And he lived a great life, and if any one of us should to live to 97 and be as collective as he was, you know, I just think that's a blessing in itself.
Yeah, he was very special. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
Also, you know, I was in touch with Herb Boyd. I think I mentioned that to you over there from the Amsterdam News. And,
right.
Because he did a program. Excuse me. The weather at this time, you know, making my throat scratchy. But anyway, he did a story, you know, about Dr. Ben. And everyone, whenever anyone talks about Dr. Yosef Ben Yekanen, even though the last name is spelled Jochannon, I was always sure to make sure that I had the proper pronunciation. So
right.
Dr. Ben Yekanen. And people were absolutely amazed as not only at his intellect, but the level and the depth of his knowledge, you know, on African history, on Egyptology, on Egyptian history. And, of course, that, as we will probably remember seeing, if you were watching Gil talk to Dr. Ben on a number of occasions, that led Gil Noble to go on a trip with Dr. Ben, and Dr. Ben had to get permission from the people in Egypt to go into the, you know, the monuments and the statues and the, you know, the statues of, you know, African figures and African kings and queens. And and I would imagine that that is still that kind of footage. Those shows that he did, that Gil did, is still around. However, you know, we will... We'll be trying to keep track of it. Somebody has it. Since he was on the ABC, you know, I guess it's their property, but anyway. So, do you know anything about that?
You're right about that, Kay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're historical pieces, and, you know, the thing is that it's a pity. I know that Alton Maddox, the activist here in New York, has been pretty much staging a campaign against ABC with regard to getting them to do or at least release or show on an exhibit basis a lot of Gil's work. I really don't know what's become of that, but, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, a lot of that material is historical, and it should be, you know, placed somewhere where people could see on a regular basis.
Absolutely, because some of the things that he did, you know, with Dr. Ben, and certainly, you know, that's footage, you know, going into Egypt and, you know, traveling among the huge buildings there was extraordinary. And with Dr. Ben there, he was actually explaining it. In other words, he took him on a tour, and he explained what every single, you know, big, huge building and the Sphinx and all those old things, and it was like when I saw it on television, I was really taken aback. I had never seen anything like it, so I want to see it again.
Right, I can imagine. I'm assuming that Dr. Jeffries will eventually call and at least update us if there's anything new, you know, with respect to what the family is planning, but that should be a great event, and I look forward to attending, you know. And it's hard to believe that he's gone, but his spirit still lives on, and so many people will be out there, I'm certain, that day, you know, to pay tribute and certainly remember and reflect on the life and times of Dr. Ben, for sure, you know. I was earlier seeing, not to shift gears, but I was just wondering, has there been any feedback or comment, you know, regarding the whole Bob Menendez situation? The senator who, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, I saw, too, that he just got indicted. You know, that was the news that came on an hour ago. And he claims, you know, he's ready to fight it. That's what he said in his press conference. So it should be interesting to see whether how they go about this thing, because he says that the person is a friend of his, and what I guess the charge is that he's stealing money, doing favors for in return for things. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious myself, because it'd be one thing if a Republican administration had brought this on, but the fact that, you know, this is, you know, Obama and Eric Holder's office, you know, doing the digging, it's going to be interesting to see, because I know he has been somewhat critical at times, although I agree with some of the things he says, but I'm not necessarily a big fan of his position on Cuba, but he has a right to his perception, you know. I'm not of Cuban descent. I could only imagine those who felt that Fidel Castro did the wrong thing, but, you know, I mean, that's something that's just going to be, you know, a back and forth argument for some time to come. But, you know, all in all, I thought Menendez, you know, I felt that he was somewhat progressive, but, you know, it's going to be interesting where he's going to try to get support now, given the circumstances. So, I don't know. You know, I didn't get a chance to see his response to the, I think it was like a 14 or 15 page indictment, you know, but it'll be interesting to see what unfolds with this.
Yeah, well, he is in deep, deep trouble. I understand from, you know, news reports today. And I don't know. I'm surprised, you know, because I always thought that he was, you know, anyway, special.
And especially with, you know, the Obama administration coming to an end and, you know, the Democrats cannot afford, you know, it's bad enough that we no longer have control to a certain extent in Congress. But I don't know. Something's going on. I guess it'll come out in the wash sooner or later.
Yeah, apparently there was something that they were trying to start the investigation, I guess, about a year ago. And then this says on the press conference, he said he's angry and ready to fight because today contradicts my public service career my entire life. And he said, also he says, I have always conducted myself in accordance with the law, and this is not how my career is going to end. So he's ready to ready to fight the charges. However, he said he is going to temporarily step down as ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Right.
He wrote that in a letter to Harry Reid. So, you know, and some of his other colleagues have praised that was a good decision to take, considering that he's going to be going through this this period. So it remains to be seen. He's accused of accepting nearly $1 million in lavish gifts from Solomon Melgen, an affluent Florida optometrist and longtime friend, in exchange for political favors.
Also, Senator Cory Booker, junior senator and senator from New Jersey, you know, he is in support to Menendez in a statement that he made on Wednesday. You know, he said that Senator Menendez had never, you know, wavered in its commitment to the people of New Jersey. And he did have a good reputation, you know, so we'll see what happens. I'm surprised to read that about it, you know. But also,
yeah,
you know, there's another, Kay. Yeah, there's another problem here. You know, these people have not confirmed Loretta Lynch. We'll get to that in a minute. We have another call. Let me see if this is Dr. Len Jeffries. Hello, are you on? Dr. Jeffries. Or Mal, are you on? You're on the air. Well, we don't know who it is, but anyway.
Hello, caller with the 259. Maybe that's Dr. Jeffries or Mal. Maybe they hung up. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is not Dr. Jeffries.
Yes, okay, but go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Anna Peppers, and I was calling in, and I wanted to thank you for keeping us abreast of all the current topics that you cover on your show.
Oh, thank you. Where are you calling from? Where are you calling?
New Jersey. New Jersey, Anna Peppers.
And you're what?
My name is Anna Peppers, and I'm calling from New Jersey.
Oh, Anna. Hi, how are you?
All right. I'm glad that you're keeping us abreast of all the current topics, and especially about the life of Dr. Ben.
Yes. Do you know of him? Have you been keeping up with him, Anna?
Yes, I have. I attended Jersey City State, and I'm very familiar with Dr. Ben and his trips, and, of course, with his experiences and the shows on Dr. With with Noble.
With Gil Noble, yeah, yeah.
Anna, what can you tell us? What do you, in your words, what Dr. Ben meant to you, and what you think when you think about him? What do you think about his contributions to our society, particularly for Black people?
Relevant, and he kept us abreast of the history of Egypt, Africa, and our stance in society, and many of the topics that he covered. A lot of people are not aware of him. Unless you knew who Dr. Ben was and was following what he was saying.
And then, you know,
I would suggest that those of us who know Dr. Ben to acknowledge it by experiencing it and leading it to our young people who are not as familiar. Because it's with the old historians that we have a back to stand on.
That's right.
To know where we came from in order to know where we're going. And Dr. Ben is an excellent example of where we came from.
Thank you, Anna. Thanks for your input. We appreciate you calling in and taking part in the discussion. And
okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye. As you know...
Thanks, Anna.
As we all know, that Dr. Ben surely was a precious part of African American culture and society here in the United States. All over the world, he was a benefit and a great asset to Black people in terms of, as Anna said, making sure we know what our history is and where we're coming from and where we're going. So we surely miss him, but we have to pick up the mantle in terms of knowing ourselves, knowing our history, and where to go. You want to talk again about Loretta Lynch? Of not getting confirmed, and some of these Republicans really making kind of trying to block her resignation. Wayne, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I've been following it off and on. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm just surprised no decision has been made yet. And I don't know what to make of it. When I heard Rudolph Giuliani, of course, she worked under him years ago, came out and endorsed her. I thought to myself, well, gee, it's commendable that he would actually do that. But sometimes he could be like the kiss of death, you know? And, this is my myopic opinion. I really don't know what's behind it. I'm not surprised the Republican Party is doing its utmost to put the kibosh on the appointment, but I just think it's so important that she be given the opportunity to serve. And, of course, this extends Holder's tenure there, but I know that he's probably just as anxious to pass the mantle on to her. And, you know, she's quite an extraordinary person. I mean, you know, definitely dedicated to her craft and has done wonderful things here in the Southeast District of New York. And, you know, it just seems to be that Republican roadblock again that just – and I'm concerned now with the Menendez, although he'll be there, you know. We need every vote that could possibly count to see this thing through. So that's certainly of some concern.
I have to say this. the Republicans are in deep doo-doo at this particular point. They were trying to fool around with a qualified African-American woman who has the qualifications that they can't even talk about. And they are going to not confirm her as Attorney General of the United States. They don't know what they're bringing on their heads. Let me tell you, there's going to be such a movement among African-American women. If this moves in this negative way, I think I'm imagining every single women's organization, sororities, all the organizations, women are going to really have a fit. I'm going to start it right now. So I want people to call and talk to these people in, you know, in Congress, make your voices heard, get your associations going. Here is a fight. This is a real fight. We need Loretta Lynch in that particular office. Eric Holder has to leave, and we need somebody in there to represent people from the African-American community, Latino community, African spirit. You have a fight, Republicans. Let me tell you, you don't know who you are voting with.
Well, you know, but that could be applied to so many different issues that they seem to want to challenge and, you know, and block this administration at every turn where they feel the need to do so. And I don't know, this the fact that he's in his last term and he's extended this appointment offer to her, you figure that it's bad enough that we no longer have control in the Senate and the House. You would think that something would be done just to, at least bend, because they did say after the previous election and they regained, majority support there, that they were going to bend. They were going to try to do things fairly, but it just seems to be the same old bag of tricks, you know, that they're doing everything that they can to undermine up until 2016. And you know, I know they already got their guns drawn against Hillary, so this is probably part of that campaign. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, absolutely. The Republican administration, the Republicans, their game plan is to try and dismantle everything that Barack Obama has done. And so it makes sense, that they're doing it. But, you know, in their hatred, they kind of, you know, are shooting themselves in the foot. What the situation in Indiana comes to mind, passing this right to discriminate legislation that they have. And they're just kind of, you know, their hatred seems to come out so often in such obvious ways. It's really bizarre to see these people go through this kind of a mental catharsis, I guess, in terms of they're trying to live in a modern society, you know. A lot of these people want to take back American culture back 50 years where, you know, there was a kind of a white supremacist mentality in the United States, as well as a sexist mentality, as well as the anti-gay mentality, and just anti-minorities, period. And it's just really, it's kind of a remarkable thing to watch these people just really lose their mind about so many things, but I guess their way of life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Mal calls in, Wayne, we're going to be hearing about the problems of the black colleges right now. So we hope that he's going to be joining us. But, you know, I'm so annoyed, so angry about this Loretta Lynch not, you know, being confirmed as Attorney General. And I hope that people listening, you know, really start some sort of movement, especially the women's organizations, associations, sororities. There's so many. And, you know, when black women get involved with something, you know, that we know is right, you know, they want to be turning back. But how dare they do this? And we're also talking, that leads us into police brutality, okay?
Exactly.
There's so many different areas that has to be straightened out. I don't know what's going to be happening, but people aren't going to be taking this any longer. So they really have to, you know, get it together, I'm telling you.
Well, I think this is it's an excellent point, Kay. I think a campaign should be started at this point.
Yes.
And we need to, you know, rattle the cages of the NAACP, the Urban League, and all these organizations to get on the good foot and try to see this appointment through, because it seems like we're losing battles left and right, and there's a certain apathy that has long existed in our community. But even with that, we can't afford to just, dismiss it and ignore it, you know. She has been, if you would look at her record just here in New York, of anyone who should be sitting in that seat, should be her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Abner Louima case, you know, she was a participant in, mm-hmm. and so many other different cases that Diallo, and we could go on and on in terms of her history, but the bottom line is, it's just that I just don't know what the agenda is, and I gather that if it were someone who was not of color, maybe it would have been a little easier, but I just don't get it. It shouldn't be based on the predicated on one's skin color. It should be predicated on one's ability and what they bring in terms of a certain gravitas, if you will, to holding the seat. And that's it. She has the experience, and there's no question about that.
It's amazing, I'm telling you. Boy, okay.
Yeah, but 2015, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Well, it's time that we change them, really. I mean, it's getting to the point where instead of moving forward, you know, some people are moving backwards, and we should not allow that, not under any circumstances. You know, what people went through a long time ago should not be repeated because it's too dangerous. You know, if you're going to rile up a certain group of people, you know, you're putting your own lives on the line. So it doesn't make sense. You know, I was talking about this black book, Lane, and I'm looking through it. I don't think you've seen it, but it's a very unusual book. And I'm going to be referring to it. It has so many different things that I didn't even know about, you know, going back to 1862 and even before that and where, you know, the Africans came from and how they were captured and how they were kidnapped and sold, and they even have pictures of the sale. For instance, there's a picture here of a poster. It says, "Caution, colored people of Boston, one and all, you are hereby respectfully cautioned and advised to avoid conversing with the watchmen and police officers of Boston, for since the recent order of the mayor and aldermen, they are empowered to act as kidnappers and slave catchers." Then it goes on.
Unbelievable.
You know, that therefore, if you value your liberty and the welfare of the fugitives among you, you know, show them in every possible manner, as so many hounds on the track of the most unfortunate of your race. Keep a sharp lookout for kidnappers and have top eye open. Is that ridiculous? So.
Who's the book written by?
Different people. Different people. Langston Hughes.
Okay.
It's a compilation of a lot of stories and narratives, you know.
Well, it appears also to be news stories. Why don't we flip through it and cover? But it appears to be a compilation of news stories and various artifacts for over time and stuff that's collected there. It's the Black Book.
I'd like to get a copy.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to find this, Wayne.
Also, this week in the news, we were just talking about, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but they had water cut. Well, we didn't touch on this earlier, but I wanted to finish up what we started talking about in Indiana with this new law here, Wayne, this law that allows people to discriminate basically based on their religious beliefs, kind of a backwards way of people based on their beliefs to discriminate against people that happen to be gay. Or bisexual. It's just intricate how a lot of these states are trying to put that through. And now that now it's getting the light of day, or a lot of people are actually hearing about these laws, you know, there's a lot of pushback, you know. And as you know, the governor of Arkansas was prepared to sign a similar law into law until he got a lot of pushback from one person, being his own son, signing a petition for freedom.
And I'm amazed. You know, I mean, the thing is that to see that kind of activity still going on, and I believe at this point it's about to die down, that it's not going to go anywhere, because you have Walmart, which, you know, basically has a big impact on the economy, and let alone all the people who work for that organization. They don't want to be associated with it. It's really taking on legs now, and I just think that whole issue is just going to be laid to rest. I'm just amazed that some people actually had a chance to have it go through to a certain extent in Indiana, and But, you know, there's so much criticism against it now. And it's the world that we live in today. I mean, you know, that to me is like something out of the Dark Ages, you know. I'm just shocked that there is a school of thought, whether it's coming out of the religious community or not. And there are a lot of conservative black people who perhaps favor something of that nature, but because of a bias. But, you know, it's about live and let live today. You know, it's that's the thing. I think it's, you know, we've seen such a change in this country, even as it pertains to gay marriages and things of that sort, that, you know, it's about acceptance, tolerance and acceptance now, you know, and that applies to just every issue.
Well, clearly not for everybody. Obviously, there are those people that want to restrict people's rules. I mean, Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, was asked by George Stephanopoulos if he felt that he asked him point blank, do you feel gay and lesbian people should be discriminated against? He couldn't just come out with a definitive answer and say
exactly.
Yes or no, which was really kind of surprising at how these people are really trying to pacify a certain segment of their electorate, that they won't even say the decent thing, that you shouldn't discriminate against anybody. And they refuse to say those words in fear that they're going to kind of put off their a portion of their base, and just to pander to a section of any part of society that it promotes hate and division is really kind of bizarre, that these people actually get on TV and with a straight face try to talk their way around it. It's really bizarre what these guys try to do.
You know what? Who was it? Cruz with Obamacare?
Yeah.
It was the same Cruz?
Ted Cruz
he was so against Obama and against Obamacare.
Right, and then he was forced to... No, you're right. And I'll tell you something. I mean, the thing is that it really had, the legislation has made a difference for a lot of people, and I still think there are a lot of kinks to be worked out, because, you know, I can speak for myself, and I've said this before, that, you know, sometimes I got to make a decision between eating or paying that healthcare premium. But, you know, I still applaud the fact that the president took the effort to change the landscape in terms of healthcare in this country. Because either way, whether you know, everybody has a chance now to get the same kind of treatment at a hospital, no matter who you are, you know, and what your background is. And hopefully, at some point in time, the United States will be like some of the other progressive nations in this world, where healthcare is not so costly. You know, you look at places like France and Canada, and, you know, even parts of other parts of Europe, I should say, with respect to France, you know, particularly the Western European countries. You know, a lot of them have free healthcare. That, you know, far more civil when it comes to things like that. It's just that this system here is all about making money and to a certain extent ripping people off, and if you don't stay on top of what goes on, it's quite a challenge. But it's just sad the way it is, but that's it. You know
let me just interrupt you for a minute. I'm still reading the black book. And I came across this article. It says, tourists who visit, now this is the old history, written by and for African Americans, okay? It says, tourists who visit Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, can see the memorial to black cowboy Bill Pickett in the Cowboy Hall of Fame, known as the Dusty Demon. Pickett is credited with inventing the sport of bulldogging. He was the star of the 101 Ranch show. That happens to be Bob Pickett's, I think, great-grandfather. Okay?
Oh.
Bill Pickett. The best cowhand this person ever knew. He died in 1932. And then it says the Goodnight Trail, and, you know, we know horses here in Jersey, you know. Now, by the way. Not now. Anyway, it says the Goodnight Trail was a route by which huge herds of steer owned by Charles Goodnight was taken. It lives from Texas through New Mexico to the railroad centers in Colorado. The voice, the cowboy that Mr. Goodnight depended on most to get his herd to market was Boys Icard, a black man. Icard not only saved Goodnight's life, but almost single-handedly saved an entire crew of cowboys from stampeding a herd. When Icard died in 1929, Goodnight erected a memorial over the grave of his friend. And then they talk about the Pony Express and all the... So I'm just taking I'm telling you. For great information. I will have to do more about this book and about the famous bulldoggers. You know, as a matter of fact, the rodeo was originated by a lot of black cowboys, but I'll get into that at another time. But anyway, still worth waiting to hear from Mal Wolfolk about the black colleges, and as soon as we do, we will go on from there.
I'm kind
of... Also in some other news, some kind of funny news, not really that funny, but interesting. And they had a little thing online about Chris Rock taking selfies of himself being pulled over three times within the last 7 weeks in his Alpine, New Jersey neighborhood. And it just goes to show that no matter how much money you have or who you are, you still, if you're black, you're still going to get pulled over. This article says that Chris Rock's been pulled over three times in less than 7 weeks. And is driving in his Alpine neighborhood in New Jersey. One time he was pulled over while doing a show, while filming a show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld. And Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock were pulled over by a Ramsey, New Jersey police officer while on their way to Chris Rock's neighborhood of Alpine. So, and Jerry Seinfeld was driving. Although I kind of maybe have a feeling that maybe the cop recognized Jerry Seinfeld and pulled him over just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
Chris Rock getting pulled over, and it just goes to show that still alive and well, that you're driving while black is a problem, as pretty much living while black is in America.
I'm just taken back by that, because Alpine is like one of the most exclusive sections there in Jersey. You know, it's just before the New York border off 9W. I mean, a lot of prominent people have been in that community for a long time, and people of color. I know Stevie Wonder had a home, or I believe he still has a home in Alpine. And I'm just shocked that they would actually go ahead and do something like that, you know? I don't know the circumstances. Maybe they might have been speeding, but it just seems like to be the typical thing, you know, where they just take advantage of people of color.
It's even gotten more typical, as a matter of fact. It's not getting, you know, in fact, that things are really getting worse for some odd reason.
The communities where they would get pulled over. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that you're shocked to find that out. It seems to make sense that you have an affluent community and they see a black person riding around, they're automatically, I'm not shocked or surprised at all. That seems to be unfortunately. So, unfortunately, I'm not surprised they pulled them over.
Yeah, you know, the thing is like I, for instance, I go to see my family in the Poconos from time to time, and I'll go straight out on 80. But the biggest fear I have is like after exit 25, just before you get to the Pennsylvania state line, it just seems like the state police there, they're just looking to pull you over for picking your nose or something, forgive me. You know, I mean, just anything to stop you. And even though the speed limit is a little higher in that section of the state than it is, you know, like near where the city's closest to New York would be, but I always hold my heart in my hand when I go through northwest New Jersey, and I'm not the only one who's done that, you know, as well. I mean, I know a number of people who have always, you know, complained about what goes on up in there, and whether it's legitimate or if, God forbid, if you break down out there, that's another story. But you know, it's just so hard to believe in this time, in this day and age, that we're still putting up and have to tolerate that kind of behavior.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is unfortunate that in this day and age is something that's going on. However, you do have elected officials that kind of promote, you know, an unspoken racism, and sometimes it's even pretty blatant and out there for a lot of them, just in terms of kind of the programs and the things they say. And we know that how people have reacted to the president has, you know, really put the racism out there. I mean, even the president's niece, who is playing for one of the former four teams in the women's basketball, NCAA, they had to beef up security because there were threats against his niece. So we're living in a time when the racists really come out and are really at the forefront of just kind of letting the racist law kind of hang out, you know, and really just how cruel some people can be in terms of wanting rights for some people and not wanting to give rights to all people. I mean, we're living in a time when they're trying to cut back on people's rights to vote, people's rights to receive health insurance. You know, I mean, just we talked about a few minutes ago the irony of Ted Cruz collecting being on Obamacare.
Right.
You know, as he claims he's going to follow the law because that's what he does, but he's going to be against it. So it's just really ironic that, you know, what they try to do. And with a straight face, many of these people would have you believe that they're sincere and they're not speaking out of both sides of their mouth, but you know, when you hear them talk and you see their actions, it's any wonder that anybody could believe that any of these people are sincere in what they are promoting. Some are promoting a certain lifestyle that kind of favors one class of people and one group of people over the others. But and I don't even know how Ted Cruz can run for president. I'm still trying to figure that one out. He's born in a foreign country. He's born in Canada. And his father is Cuban, and his mother, I guess, his mother's American, so that makes him American. But it's just ironic that, you know, this guy has so much to say about America and Obama and all this stuff, and this guy is barely an American himself.
Remember, he held up Congress with that, you know, reading that dopey poem, right?
Right. He held up the, right. Yeah, it brought Congress to the almost to the brink in terms of blocking the legislation.
Yeah, it's amazing. But they're you know, I just hope that, you know, it seems like their national ticket is in trouble. You know,
right.
It's back to either Bush, you know, I can't think of his name, the former Fox television commentator. I could see his face. You know what I'm talking about. The governor.
Huckabee.
Yeah, him.
Yeah.
And Cruz is already
announced. I don't mean to cut you off, but we're coming up on a minute. We've been talking and we lost track of the time. So we've got 66 seconds to the end of the show. We want to thank everybody for tuning in, listening to this episode of the K Thompson Live Show here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You are our co-host over there, Mr. Wayne Gilman.
Good evening.
Thanks for calling in and a lively discussion once again. I'm the other co-host. My name is Eric Payne.
And I'm Keith Thompson, and thanks to Eric Peckers for calling in.
Right, and listen again. You can always listen to us every Wednesday at 8 o'clock on the blogtalkradio.com/KThompsonLiveNetwork, or you can listen to the show live every Wednesday at 8, or you can catch us on the archives and listen to the show then. All righty. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Here we go.
Okie dokie.
Take care. Bye-bye, Wayne.
All right.